All right. I'm Matt, compulsive overeater. Do I have to press anything, Rachel? We're good. Okay. All right. Thanks for sitting. I didn't know I had 30 minutes. This is good because that's... No, it was good. I had to get it down from 90 to 89. But, I think I have... I've been accused of not talking a lot in these meetings, because I do say pass a lot, but I think actually I share more than I get credit for, because I often say, well, usually I pass, but I'm going to say something today. So just to clear my record a little bit. I'm just going to, I got to say this part at the beginning just so I don't forget it, but throughout like my whole biography story that I'm about to tell you, there's always been this undercurrent that up until recently I thought was just part of being alive, but turns out I had anxiety and hold on to distorted ideas of right and wrong like way too tightly for my whole life, and I spend a lot of my time trying not to get in trouble, and you know, that's how I lived for 36 years. And then in the last year it took a lot of persuasion, but I was persuaded that that's There's another way. I'm also going to say that whenever we go around, I always say my name is Matt, compulsive overeater, and that's true. And at the beginning, you know, for the first 6 months or whatever of coming to these meetings, I would like practice it in my head before my turn came up, and then I'd say it. And then later when I was, I realized that I was actually fit the criteria for bulimic and sugar addict. I still never had the courage to really add that, and I don't know why, so I'm just going to say I'm Matt, bulimic and sugar addict, and that's the second time I've ever said that in the circle. Thanks. I don't know, I should skip all this stuff. Well, okay. Like, it's naturally, maybe I'll get a little nervous in this position, and I was wondering why I would get nervous. And anyway, here's some anxieties that I have in this meeting, which aren't many, and I'll talk about that in a bit. But when I'm in here, like, I feel like I should say, I'm Matt. I still can't believe any of this ever happened or is happening, because right now it feels like none of it ever happened or it was true. Or especially this one, I'm Matt, and I feel shame because weight is not my issue, and I know it's a lot of people's issue, and I feel like I need to apologize for that, even though I know I don't, and that's dumb, right? Or like, I'm Matt, and I feel like a phony because my bulimia has an asterisk, and it's nothing like some other stories I've heard, and I know that that's dumb too, right? Those are some things I've thought in these rooms when we're going around, and I'm like, oh gosh, what can I say? What can I need to be true? And anyway, now I said those. just going to throw all the hard stuff out in the front. I've heard a lot of people in these rooms say something along the lines of, like, I grew up in a church and it was not, didn't work for me. And then when the idea of a higher power came up, I thought, no way, Jose, and then had to come reconcile what that meant. I grew up in a church. My father's actually a minister, and I'll get into that in a bit. And it didn't pan out the way it was supposed to, but for me, I didn't blame the church on that. So anyway, my higher power is the Christian version of a higher power, and I'll probably say Holy Spirit once I get so impassioned, so y'all know what I mean. I'm going to steal a line from Charlie, too. That's cool. I didn't know you'd be here. I thought you were out of town. I apologize again.
I flew in.
you heard.
I heard.
Yeah. all right, so I'll run through kind of some childhood stuff, a lot of which was repressed up until this last year that I forgot, or it was just so normalized I never thought anything of it until it was kind of became clear that it wasn't normal. But my youngest memory I don't know how old I was. I was actually two, because I don't know the age, but I had been four, maybe five at the oldest, but you know, we grew up with the Christian understanding of you die and go to heaven and live with Jesus in eternity. And thinking of eternity and something never ending scared me to death. And I would lay in bed so scared of eternity. And I remember specifically being in my top bunk, and I told my mom, like, I don't want to go to heaven. She said, why? And, you know, I didn't have the language to explain. I was like, because it's scary as heck. But, you know, I laid in bed and I was afraid of eternity. I remember that. And it really, if I think about it now, I'm still afraid of eternity. Like, that's pretty scary, but I think I get it now, but I don't know that that was dumb. I had on my second earliest memory, this is related to all of this. I was in preschool, so I don't know, 4 or 5 probably. And I was always about not getting in trouble, you know, following rules was one of my hobbies, still is. And my preschool teacher, they gave us these snacks. They were Ritz crackers with peanut butter, like the sandwich thing, you know. I remember that. And the teacher said, eat them one at a time. And the kid next to me put 2 of them in his mouth. So I had the teacher's back. And I reprimanded that kid. Except I was like 4. And I didn't, as the sentence was coming out, I didn't know how to say 2 at a time. I remember this, right? So I said, hey, don't eat them, oh shit, one at a time. So I just said the closest thing I could say was don't eat them one at a time. And I got in trouble for that. And then I grew up and majored in a language and became obsessed with puns. I don't know if that's directly related or not, but like one of my earliest memories is getting in trouble in an unfair position. And you'll see that I've just been indignant the entire time ever since as I go on. I was a really good speller because I was good at following rules and I was a decent athlete, but on game day, you know, I was a wreck because I just had anxiety, but it hadn't quite been invented yet. So no one knew what was going on. I think I should probably step 9 my former baseball coaches because I was good in practice and not in games. I was also afraid of my dad all the time because he was, I don't know what he was. He was trying hard not to be my grandpa as a father. Because my grandpa was just, you know, a real nightmare. He was bipolar and all this. And my dad was trying hard not to be that, but I don't know. I don't know what was in his head, but his mood dictated the mood of the whole house. And this was like my whole childhood. We couldn't, you know, emote in any way, in a happy way until we kind of took the temperature, like, what's dad doing? What kind of mood is he in? Oh, okay, he's chill. We can laugh, you know, but otherwise it was all business. And I got used to that, and it didn't occur to me that that was not normal till I think maybe 10th or 11th grade. You know, and then when it showed up on my 4th step. Woo! Okay, so this is me as a kid still. And all right, this ninth grade, I had my first job, and that's not part of it. In ninth grade, I remember realizing that I worried about everything, and none of it was stuff that I should be worrying about, and no one else was worried about these things. And so I, like, mustered up some courage, and I told my mom, again, you know, like the eternity thing, I'm not going to tell my dad because I'm afraid of him. So I told my mom, in ninth grade, I was like, Mom, I worry about everything. And I listed off the things. And I don't remember what she said. She didn't, I think it was like, oh, well, we'll see. We'll talk about this. And then shortly after that, I was in the car with just my dad, and he turns to me and he's like, your mom says you worry about stuff. I'm like, no, I don't. you know, so that was when I learned that I should never tell anybody anything. Well, actually, he gave me advice. He told me I should stop worrying about stuff. So I did stop telling people things. So there was a lot of fear going on. I should also say Tourette syndrome has been a part of my life since before I could talk. This was, you know, this is like a family joke that I don't know how old I was. I was walking but not talking, so maybe like two. And I would like grab the couch and I'd tense up and freeze and squeeze and flex all my muscles. And my parents took me to the doctor in like Farmtown, Minnesota, and they explained this to the doctor. And his reaction, this is the family joke, and his reaction was, well, does he growl? Like, I look like a lion. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of that. That's all that ever happened. So then all through grade school, when I was, you know, contorting my neck and stretching my mouth all the time and, like, my arms and my wrists, nothing. You know, the advice, again, was, like, stop. So I tried. I still have tics, you know, almost about every 3 to 7 seconds, but I hide them pretty good. It's like ankle, toe, wrist, butt cheek. I don't know the scientific word for butt cheek, but so, I flex it a lot. And sometimes I'll get into the Tourette's thing again. My first time I went to therapy was this last year, and he asked me, like, what do you keep doing with your face? And I was like, oh, I have Tourette's. And he's like, oh, geez, this changes everything. You had Tourette's, so you were bullied as a kid. And I was like, no, I wasn't bullied as a kid. I mean, not really. And he was really surprised by that because he thought I should have been bullied as a kid. And I said, well, I wasn't bullied as a kid. He said, why not? And I was like, I guess I used to move a lot, you know, state, school, houses. I moved a lot. And I just got good at, like, reading the room and finding which people I need to be friends with in order to succeed. And then I'd make them laugh or whatever, I guess. I don't know. And, you know, he called me on that. Like, I've overused being funny for my life. And I was like, I haven't said one funny thing yet. You should see me. You should see my blog. Yeah. So I'm moving on to high school. I was still really into following rules, doing what I'm told. I'd make these bargains with myself. Like, if I didn't like the rule system, because at this point I'm starting to question the validity of things that adults say to me, you know, like I'm catching on that maybe my dad is not right all the time. And so I would kind of write my own rubric, and then I'd bargain with myself to follow these rules. And it was pretty much always a lose-lose situation, but it was still messed up. But I learned to navigate the high school without getting in trouble. And this is where I steal from Charlie. That's when I started to realize that my God had a lot in common with my dad. Remember saying that? Okay. Where basically it's like, as long as I don't do these three things, I can't be punished, so I can do everything else. Like, I know it's going to get me in trouble. You know, I'd go to a party and they'd be like, drink. And I'd go, no, I can't drink, but I can encourage and embrace all these attitudes and do all this bad stuff, you know, with my language and my whatever. As long as, like, I'm in the clear, though, if I don't do the one thing that I decided is the difference between good and bad behavior. So that carried into college. I changed the rules as I needed. Like, I could get drunk on Saturday as long as I went to church on Sunday. And God never said anything about it, so it seemed to work out. I never went really crazy with sex or booze or drugs in college, but that's when we had unlimited cafeteria food and sugar became real enticing at that time. I never gained weight. I mean, not much. I guess I was like 26 pounds heavier than I am now, so maybe normal for my size, my height, but I did consume a lot of sugar, and I just remembered sleeping and shitting all the time. And that's the last time I'll talk about poop. So, but that's also taking place this, through the whole time. To steal a line from Luke, eat once, shit twice. Yeah. That's... Sorry. Yeah, I was born with that. That was innate. My senior year of college... Oh, wait, hold on. Here we go. So I'd kind of changed the rules as I needed, but I would still, you know, it was a perverted, distorted rather way of living. My sophomore year, I studied abroad with this group of like 10 people, and we were pretty tight, and that was a good time. So that was in Spain, and there was this one girl who just always got drunk, and we kind of took turns like getting her home safely. And this one night it was not my turn. And the girl whose turn it was, this is weird, right? She didn't show up to take Jenny was her name. She didn't take Jenny home. And then the next day we didn't really have, like, we had cell phones, but it cost like $10 per text. So we basically didn't have cell phones. And the next day I told this girl, I was like, hey, what the heck? Where were you? You're supposed to meet us to pass off Jenny. That was like really inconvenient for me. And she's like, I'm so sorry, it didn't work out. And I later learned that she'd been not raped, but the guy got pretty close physically. And this is embarrassing to say, but I was like, are you okay? Oh, so we... But still, you couldn't come and finish the job? Like, I was so inconvenienced that that happened, which I'm not proud of. And that girl, her name was Christina, like 2 years later, we were all friends still throughout college, our junior or senior year, whatever. I guess junior year, her and I started dating. And then we, you know, she was like my first serious girlfriend. And it got to the point where, like, I kept having to change the rule system, what was appropriate, what was not, you know, because I had a girlfriend and the temptations that come along with that came along with that. And she would sometimes stay over at my house, and she would have like night terrors. And, I mean, maybe I was more sensitive than I remember, but I remember being like, oh my gosh, can you just get over this? And like, she'd basically been, you know, a very traumatic thing had happened to her. And that like escalated to the point where I realized I was in way over my head, and I was the only one that knew that she was experiencing this overnight stuff. And it was like I had to be there with her overnight because she would wet the bed and wake up screaming and just have these horrible episodes. And in my head, I couldn't like call her parents, you know, because then I'd have to tell them that we're spending the night together. And I don't know, so my plan was like, I got to just let this naturally break off, let her break up with me or whatever, which I'm also not proud of. You probably know where this is going. So I moved to go teach high school in Las Vegas after we graduated, and we broke up like shortly after that. She was at home and I was like, okay, she's good. She's living with her parents. I don't remember how much long after that, within like 4 or 5 months, she took her own life. And, you know, obviously that did a number on me. I felt really guilty for a while. Luckily, her brother kind of came to the rescue, and he's like, dude, there was a lot of other stuff going on. Like, I revoke permission for you to blame yourself for this. You know, I'm like, okay, well, that's actually really helpful, Greg. Thank you. You know, but that's a heavy thing to carry. So the next year I quit being a teacher, and I thought I would just go ski in Europe for a year and drink a lot of booze and meet a lot of strangers. And I ended up sleeping on a lot of couches. And my deal was, I'll cook for you if I can sleep on your couch. And I was super depressed during that time, but I didn't really know what depression was, because in my family, I didn't say this yet, but in my family, there's no such thing as mental illness, you know, because my dad convinced me that there isn't. Which I think I'll tell you why later. He doesn't think there, he's convinced there's no such thing. But I was, you know, super depressed. And that was the first time when, you know, everybody in Spain was like, Mateo, like, how can you eat so much? I'm like, I don't know. I'm so talented. Like, I don't know. this is disgusting how much I can put down. I came back. I decided I was going to live in Denver. So I moved to Denver. My best friend lived here. I played in a band again. Like, life was good. So all that I never went to therapy. In fact, like, she died in April and then of whatever, I don't know, 05 or something, 06. The following July, or I don't know, July maybe, my parents were like, what is wrong with you? Like, you're mean, you're despondent, you're never here, you know, like, and I said, I think I'm depressed. And both of my parents were like, whoa, come on, let's not throw that word around. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm not depressed. In retrospect, kind of natural. Maybe I'd be depressed at that time. But, sorry, I got off. I made an outline so I wouldn't get off topic. Okay, so 2012, I'm in Denver. Oh, no, sorry, like 2007. Life is pretty good. I got, like, a lot of positive things going on. So it felt all right. I had another girlfriend at that time, and it just got to the time where it felt like we probably shouldn't be together. And I told my friend, like, do you think there's a way out of this where she doesn't die? Because I don't know if I can live through that again, as if I'd gotten over the first one. Okay, 2012, I think life was pretty good. I tricked another girl into marrying me. And then I still had all these anxieties, so she was more practical and could see long-term. She's right here, by the way. This one ends happily. I mean, yeah, whatever. Ends happily. And Jackie's like, when should we have kids? I'm like, oh, how about never? She's like, why? Because we could make a mistake. Okay, we should have kids. Should we buy a house? No. Why? Because we get in trouble. We can make a mistake. That's just how I live my life, right? So luckily we had some kids, or a house, not in that order, whatever. 2016. Okay, so we have two at this time, right? 2016, my friend from college, he wants to lose weight. And I didn't even know he gained weight. I hadn't seen him in a while. But he calls me and says, I'm doing this thing and I have to be punished if I don't lose weight. And he said, you're the only one who follows rules well enough to hold me to this. And I was like, well, thank you, Morgan. Yes, I am. And so he got really into the ketogenic diet, and then we kind of did too. And, you know, just like, oh, this seems cool. And so we tried it out, and it was, you know, it was kind of neat. Like, I learned this is the last time I talk about pooping. Okay. Like, 3 days in, I went, you know what's different? Wait a minute. Is this Google? 20 minutes later, I learned that I had had IBS my whole life, also undiagnosed. I just thought everybody sprinted to the bathroom 2 to 6 times a day. And then, you know, it was a big deal. So I was a little indignant to my parents about that. And then I'm like, oh, maybe this food thing, there's something onto this. You know, so I started getting really into, I started reading all the keto books and then just whatever nutrition books. And then it was a neat experiment, except for it ruined every social activity we had. I was like, oh, what kind of food is going to be there? Oh, what am I going to say to these people? Oh, who's going to get sick of me talking about food all the time? And it became an obsession pretty quickly. I'm constantly examining food choices. I'm berating myself when I couldn't stick to it and getting angry at other people. Like, didn't you read the carb count? What's wrong with you? Orthorexia, if you know that term, It's orexia is the eating, right? And then ortho is straight, like orthodontist is straight teeth. So orthorexia is like an obsession with healthy eating. I definitely had that for a while. 2017 to 2018, that year I had my grad school thesis. We're pregnant with our third kid, and our other two are still really small and loud and waking us up at night. And just slowly things are like getting worse and worse as far as how frequently and how aggressively stressors show up, you know. And the food thing was like right there to become the problem for me. It was just primed and ready. I had my what's it called? My thesis paper was due that year, and there was just so little time. So now I'm like waking up at 4 a.m. and it was an unhealthy time. My first, for sure, binge eat that I can remember, it was this chocolate pumpkin cake. It was in October of 2017, and we were at this party, and I remember knowing, like, I feel horrible. Why am I doing this? And it's kind of important that it's pumpkin chocolate cake. But I had acid reflux the next day. I'd never had that before. Turns out I'd have it plenty more times in the next year. My friend Morgan, he got married in March of 2018, and I was the best man. And we had just had our third child born March 1st of that year. So this is like 3 weeks after our third child's born, I have a thesis due, and I was in the airport, and my Tourette's syndrome started taking off as if I were 10 years old again. And I texted Jackie, like, I don't know what's happening right now. I don't think they're going to let me on the plane. Like, I was freaking out. And I got on the plane, and a few times that weekend, I tried to practice my best man toast, and I couldn't. I started ticking so hard. I started hyperventilating, and this, you know, I've gone years without big problems like that. But it was back, and it was back hard, and I never once rehearsed my toast because I couldn't. My body stopped me, but doing the toast was fine. I just couldn't rehearse it. I don't know what that was. And I came home, and for the next 2 weeks, like, it couldn't stop. It was so bad. I learned some breathing technique where you like sit and you meditate and you breathe and you imagine all this shit and whatever. And I did that, and my tics shut off I wasn't timing it, but it was like probably 27 seconds. You know, 27 seconds, I could just sit still. And this is like at 5 a.m. And I started crying so hard because my body had never, just doesn't do that. Since then, I've gotten it up. I can go probably like 4 minutes now. I'd practice that all the time, but that was the first one. And this is, you know, when everything's escalating. Okay, I lost my spot. I'm sorry. In the fall of 2018, so this is the following fall, our second son goes to the hospital for asthma stuff, and then we're just like touch and go survival mode with everything. And that's when I'm like, diet be damned. I was kind of driving back and forth, bring this, bring that, give me the car, your turn, my turn, and because we had a newborn at home too. And that's when I started hitting drive-thrus and gas stations. Like, I couldn't make a trip without stopping somewhere and then stopping somewhere else to throw away the garbage so I wouldn't get caught. And then I keep it like, well, after this, I'm going to double down. After this, it's all going to change. This is the last time it's going to get good. And in the fall, I'm like doubling down on my efforts and doubling down on my bargains. Like, as long as I don't X, I'll be fine. As long as I can only do it like this, I'll be fine. But I'm, you know, once you make those deals, you're not fine. At some point I learned what OA was. I Googled it a bunch of times. Never went yet. We had our friends of ours, good friends of ours, had a baby, and we went to go see them, and they had like unfinished food right there. And I was just like white knuckling so hard that I was obsessing with food in the room, and you know, and they're all, oh, look at this picture. I was like, whoosh. Yeah, it's like our best friend baby. It's messed up. So and a good friend of mine had a going away party, and I knew like I didn't have to be back at any specific time. I was going to play it by ear, and I remember leaving the party early because I knew I could go stop at somewhere and just pick out. Like, I had no interest in beer. I just wanted sugar. And I stopped, and then I remember stopping again before, you know, it's from Parker to Denver. Obviously, I had to take two pit stops, then a third one to throw away the trash. And then we were wedding photographers. We shot this wedding in Boulder. This is October, whatever year we're in, I guess, 2018. We shot this wedding in Boulder, and you know how wedding is. There's just sweets, and it's everything's never ending. It just started again. I was like eating. I was binge eating. It was so bad. And I knew it. And I'm like, gosh, this is getting out of control. What's going on? And I couldn't stop. And it was getting later tonight. And I took a break. And I went out into the parking lot by myself. And I was just bloated and had like, you know, I felt horrible, like so shameful. And that's when I decided, like, I'm crossing the last line. If I make myself throw up, then I have no choice but to get professional help. And I was like, dang it, I need professional help, and I'm going to make myself throw up, like tie myself to the mast so I know I have to. And I went over like in a suit in a parking lot in the dark, and I did one of those things, and it didn't work. But they had glow sticks at this wedding, and I had them in my bag. So as I grabbed it, I'm like, I just know I'm going to be telling someone I did this someday. Fuck it. And I went for it. And there's this movie called A River Runs Through It. It's really old, but I remember seeing it as a kid where Brad Pitt's character, he's addicted to like whatever, gambling and alcohol, and they kick him out of the room. They want to kill him, and his brother saves his life, and they kick him out of the room. And his brother's like, that was a close call. And Brad Pitt's like, you go home. I got to go back in. And I don't know why I thought of that, but that's like, I went back into that wedding and ate more sweets. So went to my first OA meeting and sorry, how am I doing on time? Oh, I'm over. Okay. I'll wrap this up. So I went to my first OA meeting finally in November. I thought it was like the boringest cult I've ever could imagine. It was so weird. But afterwards, I met Rachel and Terry, and that made all the difference. Like I would say, the parking lot brought me back. Rachel just, she knew I needed help, and she was awesome. I'm forever thankful for her to that. I remember the second meeting just laughing so hard at, like, they weren't jokes, but just everybody, I don't know, people were so funny, and we all were in on the meaning of it. And the third meeting I went to was here. It was a speaker meeting, and it was, the speaker didn't show up, and there was only like six people here. And then so Marsha talked, and then everybody talked. And I remember thinking Amy was so cool. I had to play it cool before I just called her right away and said, teach me everything you know. I want to be your friend. And I got to know Luke. And I loved how, like Luke, he has a light touch, you know. He was like, as finally someone thinks he, someone who knows this is as absurd as I am, right? Or as I do. And so I remember laughing with Luke. That third meeting was great. I would thought, I couldn't wait for the next, so that's January. I couldn't wait for the next meeting, and all month long, I was just, oh, there's going to be another meeting. There's going to be a meeting. And then it canceled, and oh man, I was devastated. I would have skied here. And there was a whatever throughout that season, there was stuff like that where I'd put all my hope in this upcoming thing, and if it worked or if it didn't work, like it was, I'd realize that's not a way to live, like jumping from lily pad to lily pad of hopeful thing. But every OA meeting I went to felt miraculous, like I never wanted them to end, and I could sit there. And I would do the breathing thing subtly while listening, and I could shut off my Tourette's. And I just knew, like, that was a big deal. And at every meeting, I heard either some person or some quote or something would happen, like this one. Remember that one night we had all the Rachels? There's like six Rachels. One of those Rachels had Tourette's, and I'd never met an adult with Tourette's. And anyway, she was awesome. Afterwards, we've texted a lot. Okay, started therapy. Therapist one. I forgot to mention that I had a girlfriend who took her life. That's how, I guess, repressed it was. I forgot until the second session. Therapist number two. I was like, don't forget that. That shows you have progress. And I forgot until the second time again. But that's been great. I'm sorry, I'm just going to skip to the end. clearly I overdid it. The whole last year was really difficult. And these rooms were like the only rooms that I didn't want to escape from for the most part. I loved it. And slowly, you know, nothing happened, overnight. It's a gradual thing, as y'all know. And you read that and it's like, I don't want gradual, but it is gradual and it has been gradual and it's been awesome. And I also want to share one last thing. Okay. I'm sorry. So in July, all of our chickens were murdered by raccoons. And so I had this vendetta for raccoons and I'd fantasize about getting these things, you know, my good friend, Jesse, who lives two doors down, he decided we should take our friendship seriously. And I said, yes, we should. So we meet every Wednesday morning. This is Jesse, by the way. And this one Wednesday morning, in the fall, maybe October or something, Jesse says, I'm sick. I can't go. And so I woke up and I went running, and, I don't run that far. Just like do a little run. And I saw this raccoon in an alley behind Jesse's house, actually. And he turned the corner and I thought, oh my gosh, this is my chance. I gotta take revenge. I'm going to save all the chicken owners. They're going to thank me so hard. But I'm like, I can't kill a raccoon. Like, that's the size of a pony. What am I? I'm like basically naked. And I decided it was like the manliest thing I ever did. I said, no, I'm going to kill this raccoon. I'm going to follow through and I'm going to swing and I'm going to get rid of the carcass and I'm going to like wear it as a hat, Lord of the Flies style or whatever. So I grabbed this piece of wood and I'm just committed. I'm like, you know, and I turn the corner to swing at it. It's gone. It's in the dark. So I lost my chance. And so the next morning when I go run, I'm like, I got to be ready for this raccoon. And I don't know what to take because I'm running. I took a golf club. So I'm like naked in the dark with a golf club running, looking for a raccoon around every corner. I didn't see it. It's like next day, motherfucker. And so the next day I had that golf club. And as I was running, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm an idiot. Like, I've just chosen to always be on the lookout for raccoons. Like, the joy of running is gone. Completely by choice, because I'm living looking for the next thing, and I've physically burdened myself running with a golf club in order to be ready when it happens. I'm like, this is like undoing all the work I've been doing, isn't it? Like, this is the perfect metaphor for how I've been living my life. All the stuff that prepares me is just slowing me down, and the thing that might show up is, you know, taking away my presence and mindfulness, and it was just dumb. So anyway, I thought that was a good story. I'll end on that story, but, I'm so sorry, you guys, I went so long. Next time it's my turn, I just won't go. And then, and I hope that's good. So thank you guys all for being here. I hope there's some time to have like a normal meeting, because I've been telling these guys how miraculous these things are, that people just get all vulnerable as heck. And it's like a jacuzzi of humanity and love. And you just hug with these strangers, and you guys aren't strangers anymore, but I still hope we can hug. So thanks. I'm Matt. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Amen. Thank you.